Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We've all had it happen to us. You're stopped at a traffic light, and a teenager in a brightly colored T-shirt approaches the car window asking for a donation to some worthy-sounding cause, maybe to help kids with HIV or cancer, or maybe asking for money for the Boys and Girls Club. Well, now in Boston, police say they've busted a racket in which teenagers solicited donations for precisely those causes, but then went on to pocket the proceeds. Daniel Borokoff is the founder of the American Institute of Philanthropy, a charity watchdog based in Chicago. We asked him if it's common for street solicitors to keep the donations for themselves.
It does happen a lot, but we don't know to what degree it happens because there's no accountability, and that's the problem. Because when you give money to a charity, you need to give it, and you know, write a check, go online to the official site of the charity, so there can be some tracking and some auditing of the money. And you shouldn't be making decisions on the street. And there's sites like ours at CharityWatch.org that allow you to check out the more efficient, accountable charities. And also, you know, you don't want identity theft. If you give your credit card information to people on the street just because they got a hat or a clipboard or a T-shirt, it's risky. And this is not the time to waste charitable dollars. There's a great need with the economy the way that it is.
But there's a twist, if I may say, in the Boston case. Police have arrested a 46-year-old Dorchester man who they say was the ringleader. He allegedly recruited as many as 25 young people to solicit the donations, but then he took the cash. His name is Roderick Pendleton, and a few media outlets are describing him as, quote, a modern-day Fagin. That struck us as an interesting and potentially controversial use of language, because Fagin is a character from Charles Dickens' Oliver Twist. To find out just what Fagin, the character and the word, now signify, we turn to Professor John Jordan, director of the Dickens Project, based at the University of California at Santa Cruz.
Fagin is a fence. That is, he's a receiver of stolen goods in early 19th century England in the novel Oliver Twist, and he's Jewish. And one of the things that happens, a central event in the plot, is that the hero, little Oliver Twist, runs away from a bad apprenticeship and ends up in London, and he is received into the den, as it is called, of Fagin, and he becomes a member of a group of boys who are being trained to become pickpockets.
Jewish characters who played such large roles in 19th century English novels actually weren't all that common. So do we know where Dickens got his inspiration for Fagin?
He claimed later on that it was based on his own knowledge about Jewish secondhand clothes dealers and thieves, one in particular named Ikey Solomons, who was arrested and subsequently transported or sent to Australia as punishment. But we also know another thing about this, which is that when Dickens was a young boy, 12 or 13 years old, he worked in a blacking factory, a shoe blacking factory, and that there was a young boy there named Bob Fagin. And so he took the name from an actual person that he knew in life. We don't know if Bob Fagin was Jewish. He was someone who was kind to Dickens. He was an older boy and was good to him. But we don't know if that original Fagin was Jewish or not.
Well, there's no doubt in Oliver Twist that Dickens writes Fagin as a Jewish character. I mean, I remember in early editions of the book, I believe Dickens actually refers to Fagin as the Jew hundreds of times and uses that phrase more often than he even uses the word Fagin.
That's correct. In a later edition of the novel, after there were some people who wrote to him and Jewish people and objected to this, he edited it and substituted the name Fagin for the earlier references. But in the original edition, there are between 200 and 300 references to Fagin as the Jew. And Fagin in the novel is clearly a stereotype of of an evil Jewish, you know, exploiter.
But let me ask you, Professor Jordan, the reason why we're talking about this today is because one of our producers was wondering, and I think it's a great question, why is it, for example, that another very famous character from literature, particularly Shylock, from The Merchant of Venice, any time that the word Shylock is used, say, to describe a banker in modern-day American journalism, it's taken to be an anti-Semitic slur. I mean, angry letters very justifiably come into the newspaper, say, the Wall Street Journal or whomever, when the word Shylock is used. Why can we today get away with using the word Fagin in describing, you know, a man who's allegedly organized children here in Boston to get illegal donations from people on the street? Why is that okay?
Well, whether it's okay will probably depend on the person who reads about it. But my sense is that Shylock remains more closely identified with his Jewishness than the Fagin figure does in contemporary culture. And the main reason for this, I think, is that the most popular representation of Fagin is the one in the musical Oliver, the Lionel Bart Oliver, and that was played by Ron Mooney. And the Fagin in the musical is hardly Jewish at all. So I think that most modern readers don't have as strong a sense of the connection between Fagin and his Jewishness as they do with Shylock and his Jewishness.
Professor John Jordan, director of the Dickens Project at the University of California, Santa Cruz, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
In this life, one thing counts. In the bank, large amounts. I'm afraid these don't grow on trees. You've got to pick a pocket or two. You've got to pick a pocket or two. Boys, you've got to pick a pocket or two.